I'd like to introduce our first speaker. Our first speaker is Mark from Central Maryland. Nice round of applause and greeting.
Hi, my name is Mark and I'm an addict.
Hey, Mark.
And I probably need to be sitting on that side of the meeting today. As you can see, I've got this blue shirt on, which means I'm working for the registration. And I really need this meeting. But you guys have been great. I see that most everybody has their pouches on, which is a good thing. And if you didn't know, you can go to convention information and get one of these little patches when you tell them how much clean, what your clean date is. And then at the speakers meeting, they're going to announce how much clean time is actually here. So if you get a chance, go on down there. And I'm going to jump around a little bit. I guess what I'm really supposed to do is tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, and incorporate that somehow into let go and let God. So I'm going to do the best I can at trying to do that. When I first got here, and my clean date is July 31st, 1988. That's when I surrendered. That's not when I first came to the program. That's when I stopped using. And my life was a wreck. I had two court cases, and one in PG County, one in Alexandria. I have an extensive record, and I've been in and out of jail for the last 10 years before I got into the program, and I was on my way back. And the only reason I came in was maybe I'd get a break. And it took about a year for all the court stuff to finally come about, and they ended up giving me probation. But in the course of that time, I really applied myself to this program. I guess on that date of July 31st, I had went to a rehab because somebody told me that if I couldn't stop using, maybe I needed to do something else. Maybe I needed to become a little more willing, because I was coming to meetings every day, but I was still using. I'd get 3 or 4 days clean, and I'd go back out and shoot dope. And I'd get 3 or 4 days, and I'd go back out and shoot dope. And it would be like I'd wake up in the morning, and I had no intention that the night before of going out and doing it, but I'd wake up, that thought hit me, and I was downtown. And it was like no escape, you know? And so somebody suggested if you can't stop on your own, maybe you need to check into a rehab. So I told the guy if I got high again, I'd give him a call. I got a check a couple days later for $900 from my local union. And you know I went straight downtown. The difference was I had been coming to meetings for a while, and I heard things that made no sense at all. Like, one day it'll stop working. It kept working. That day I went downtown. I did 2 bags of dope. I was nodding. But what was different was I still felt like a piece of shit. I had been, excuse me, I had been using for so long that's the only relief I got. When I was completely loaded, I didn't feel that remorse and that guilt and that shame. Now, I didn't know that's why I was doing it, but that's what it was doing for me. That day it stopped working. I still felt like a piece of shit. I called the guy up. He said, okay, I'll make the arrangements. I went to, I had a friend of mine pick me up, drive me out to this place. It was probably 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening on a Friday night. I don't know why the director of the damn program was there that night. You know, I went through all their paperwork and everything, and on the way down, I was relieved. I'm finally going somewhere, because the only way I stopped before was when they put me in jail, and I couldn't get to it, you know? So I'm thinking in my mind, well, you know what, I may lose my apartment, I may lose whatever, you know, but at least I'll get the monkey off my back. So I was really, at that point, relieved to go. Had my buddy take me down there, he dropped me off, did all the paperwork. All that was left was the interview with the director. Director sits me down, and maybe he could tell from my eyes that I was high or from my behavior. I don't know. I told him what I was trying to do, and he looked at me across the table, and he said, you know what? This program ain't going to do you no good. And I don't know if he saw, I don't know what he saw in my face, but he said, look, before you do anything crazy, now you got to picture me. I'm not that big a guy, you know what I mean? And then I was probably about 40 pounds lighter, you know what I mean? And on a small guy like this, 40 pounds is a lot, you know? But I guess he just saw that I, you know, I don't know what he saw. And I said, you know what, I can't make you come in here. I can't make you bring me in here, you know? And I went into the bathroom, and I was scared to death. Because I knew that if I went back home, I'd be using again. And I just didn't know what to do. And like, you hear things in here, and then one day you understand what they're talking about, you know? I can remember sitting in the bathroom, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't know what I'm going to do. And then a thought just came over me. It was like I could visualize being in this meeting, and this elderly lady said, if I did three things, I'd be all right. If I got on my knees and asked God for the strength and courage not to pick up a drug or a drink, excuse me, I went to a meeting, and I thanked him at night, I'd be okay. And I knew with all of my heart that moment that if I did that, I was going to be okay. And I can stand up here today and say that it's been almost 20 years. I try to do that every day, and I'm still clean. Now, to get to the let go and let God, because I had surrendered, but I was still in control of my life, I thought. You know, I still, what am I going to do with these court cases? What am I going to do with the girl that I'm seeing who works at the topless bar? And, you know, so I'm going to meetings and I'm hearing things and I don't know if I can do all this. You know, I don't know if I can do all this. And I can remember, I used to play a little bit of handball when I was in the feds. They let you learn that when you're in there. And I was at this handball court in Hollywood, and I just really didn't know what to do. I just really didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do with the girlfriend. I didn't know what to do with the court cases. I didn't know what to do about a sponsor. I didn't know what to do about my life. And I got on my knees and I said, I give it up. Tell me what to do. I don't know what to do. And as it usually happens, you know, there's surrender and then there's letting go. And trusting God that whatever direction he takes you in, it's going to be okay. You know? So that day I began that process of trusting God and allowing things to happen and not having to be in control all the time. And believe me, that is a 20-year process. I'm still learning how to do that, you know? And the court cases got worked out. When I went to the one court case in Virginia, I took my sponsor with me, and I had, you know how you get those slips signed? I had a stack of them like this. Because by then I was going to two meetings a day or three meetings a day. What if I wasn't working, I was in a meeting. And if I had time to go to a noon meeting, I'd go to an 8 o'clock meeting. You know, it didn't matter. And I remember going into the courtroom, and the judge is, you know, I guess he's really not sure what to do. And I asked my sponsor at the time to come up and say a few things, and the judge just kind of asked him, what's going to keep him from doing what he's been doing? He said, if he keeps doing what he's doing, you'll never see him again. And the judge looked a little astounded at that. The state's attorney looked even more astounded and even stood up and said, you know, because she could see that he might be giving me a break. And she said, look, this guy's 33 years old. He's been shooting dope for 15 years. You know, he needs to go to jail. And he said to her, you wanted to give him 3 years. I'm going to give him 5 and suspend it. And if he comes back in front of me, you know he's going to do the 5. And that's what happened. I went home that day. And that's the first probation, parole, anything like that, that I've ever walked all the way to the end. You know? And so it's all been a process of letting go, letting God. And the key important thing there is trusting God. That he knows what's best, you know. The girlfriend, and I really struggled with it. I had been with her, we had known each other for a long time, and she had a son, and the father had pretty much just kind of left, and she didn't want that to happen again, you know. Her and the son were staying at her grandparents' house, and you know, I. But it drove me crazy when I would go to, I'd pick her son up from daycare, meet her at the park, and she'd fire up a joint, you know, and I'd be all serene for about 15 minutes, and as soon as she lit up that joint, I wanted to kill her, you know. And I knew I needed to let go, and I finally talked to her, and I said, look, I can't see you, you know. And I was able to explain to her why. She understood that. And I said, but I'm not walking out on your son. I said, I'll be there. Pick him up after school. Take him to ball practice. Take him to the ball games. I was probably more involved in his life than she was. You know? I don't regret that in the least. I know that was the right thing to do. You know, and he wasn't my son, you know, but I felt like he had been abandoned already by his own dad. I didn't need to do that, you know, and I'd love to say that, you know, he's doing fine. He's actually doing good. We've had a lot of talks about drinking and drugging, and he's totaled a couple of cars, and he's had his run-ins with the police, but he knows about this program. He knows how it transformed my life, you know. So I've done the best that I can, you know. I'm now married. My wife that I married has 2 kids. They're 12 years old. They're on their way down. And, you know, it's an ongoing process, you know. And that's not easy, you know. We don't have the kids all the time. The father has them during the week. We pick them up on the weekends. And sometimes that's difficult. We're like from 2 different worlds. And but it's really funny when the boys come over, how much they enjoy being there. They hate to go back. It's kind of like a two-sided thing. They hate to go back, yet they enjoy the school they're in. They like their friends and all that. And, you know, so there's a lot of things that they like. But I think they wish they had them both, you know. And I don't know what will happen with that. That's in God's hands. And I just got to trust God that however it's going to work out, it's how it's going to work out. I guess to get to a little closer to date. And like I say, you know, all of these things, I've had to consciously make decisions to let go and let God handle it. You know, I work for myself. At different times, I've had 5 or 10 guys working with me. I've always been, from the very first job I ever had, I'm a take charge kind of person. Some people are, some people aren't. That's the way I am. That's my makeup. I know, and one of the things that I've learned in here, when you take that inventory, because it's not just about all the bad stuff, you know, it's about knowing you for who you are. And I know that's part of my makeup. That's just who I am, you know. That's where I do my best at. So it's hard for me at times to let go. You know what I mean? At times I've got to go out and collect money. That's probably my biggest thing is, you know, the guys do a great job, they do everything, and then I got to go get the money. You know, and I'm knocking on people's doors or calling up on the phone, and sometimes it's the most humiliating thing in the world. Now, they owe me the money. You know what I mean? We've done the job. But yet, I feel like I'm begging a lot of times. You know what I mean? And but again, that's part of what I do. That's part of my job. And so, again, it's hard sometimes to know when I've done everything I need to do and to turn around and say, okay, God, it's in your hands. I can't tell you how many times before I got down here Wednesday, or I got here Thursday, on Wednesday, I was saying to God, God, look, we need to get some money in here because I got people to pay before I leave. And God came through, you know. I had what I needed before I came down. And that's the way it always works, you know. It never fails. It's just when I forget to make that decision to say, okay, God, you know what? I know what's in your hands. And I, you know, over time and over bumping my head into the wall enough times, I've gotten better with it. I can let it go easier, you know. I came on to the registration committee. I kept saying to myself, our area was hosting the convention this year, and I kept saying to myself, I'm going to get involved, but I'll do something when I get down there. And I know that there's a lot of us that have done that, you know. And what happened was, I guess I started really feeling guilty, you know. And I called the host chair, Cheryl, and I said, look, where do you need me at? And she said that, well, registration doesn't have a chairperson. And I know registration is the busiest thing down here. I said, man, give me something else. You know what I mean? And I said, okay, I'll do it. And it's caused a few fights at home. It's made work a little difficult. Because it's a big commitment, you know, a couple meetings a week, making sure everything is done, you know, and then the convention. All this stuff happens before, you know. There's so much that happens before we get to this place here that you just really don't know until you do it, you know. And I'm not a good computer person, and everybody's emailing and, you know, and... So finally, one of the girls, our vice chair, Barb, wasn't working at the time, and I said, look, why don't you come in and help me in the office, and because I really needed somebody in there. And she's been able to help me out not only at the office but also with a lot of this stuff that needed to get done. Again, let go, let God, and it works out, you know. During the course of this time, I guess it's been maybe a month now, I got a call from my sister that my mom had a heart attack and went into the hospital. My mom's 84 years old, and we're pretty close. She lives in Bowie. I probably didn't see her as much as I should, but over the course of my being clean, our relationship has grown. We talk a lot, you know. So I went to the hospital. I met on the way there. I called a priest that I know, and he came up there. And you know, this isn't a religious program, but I got to tell you how this affected my life. The things that were most important to her before she died was that she would receive communion and that she'd see a priest before she died. Those were the most important things in her life when she died. And I knew these. So I knew what I needed to do. I called him, and I got up to the hospital, and they said, look, They opened one of the valves up. They putting her in recovery room. She's probably doing okay. We're just going to have to see. They've got another valve that they need to open, but we're just going to see what happens, you know. So we were kind of hopeful that everything was going to work out okay. And I went into the room. My mom was coherent and everything, and we were talking. And she knows how I am. She knows the work that I do. She said, don't stand around here. Go out and do work. Go get out of here, you know. She knows all that's on my plate, and she knows that I'm just going to sit there and be worried or whatever, you know. So I did that. I left. My sister stayed there, my nephew stayed there, and the priest had come. He had had a chance to go in there and talk to her and give her last rites and or anointing. And my sister calls me about 7 o'clock that night and says, look, she's taking a turn for the worse. You need to come up here. So I came up, and we're sitting there talking. By then, my other sister's there. Her sons are there, her husband, everybody but my younger brother, who unfortunately is incarcerated in Florida right now. He's still clean, but he had some issues that he didn't deal with, and he's in jail because of that. Thank God he's still clean. And so we're sitting there, and the nurse comes out, and she says, or not the nurse, the doctor comes out and says, look, I don't know what your mom's wishes were. We can keep reviving her, but we're giving her shots of adrenaline to keep her heart going. And I said, no. I said, me and my mom have talked about these issues. She does not want to be continuously revived. And so I told her that, you know, by then they had her on a breathing machine. And I said that, you know, don't revive her anymore. And we were able to, all of us were there except for my brother. We were able to go back into the room. We prayed with her. We talked to her. And it was, you know, if anybody ever had their wish, she got it. Family was there, and you could just watch the machine, the heart rate machine, just drop off to nothing. We were all there. We talked to her. If anybody ever got their wish of a peaceful death, she did. So I had no regrets, no remorse. We miss her, okay? We miss her, but I know that she got what was most important to her, and I know that where she's at, you know. And again, those were the things of really letting go and letting God. Yes. You know, it's a matter of true trust. How much do I really trust him, you know? And so this program is a program of application. You know, I have to apply these things that I learn in here when these situations happen in my life. That's the whole key, is how much have I learned, and can I use it when I need it the most? You know, when I came down yesterday and we unloaded the truck and we started setting everything up, and, you know, a couple times I had to say, look, God, I need some help. It's in your hands. And again, I've never done registration before. I know it's the busiest. And we tried to prepare as well as we could to get here, and now it's in his hands. I hope that you all really enjoy this convention. I hope that you walk away with whatever you need to keep you going one more day. And I just want to thank God for getting me here, keeping me here, and hopefully I'll continue to remember to let go, let God, and trust him. Thanks. Thank you. Our
second speaker is Thaddeus from District of Columbia. Let's give him a warm welcome.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Thaddeus Amatic. First thing I want to do is thank God for letting me be here, because it's only through God's mercy and grace. And I want to thank Mark for sharing, because I really, really appreciate everything you shared. Also, real quick shout-outs. You know, I want to thank everybody that I know that's here, and I want to, you know, the people that I haven't even met yet. You know, I want to thank my sponsor, Chris W., for being here, my sponsor, Walston W., and one of my sponsee brothers, Ryan L., and a host of other people. You know, I got so much out of what you shared, because God was all in your story, and God is all in my story. And it kind of took me getting here to recognize and realize that, because I didn't even realize how much God was in my story until I stopped using and gave myself a chance. I came from a pretty good family growing up. I had a lot of opportunities. I had a lot of dreams. I had a lot of aspirations. I wanted to make something of myself. But when I used drugs, I removed myself from God. But I recognized God never removed himself from me. Okay, I was very disobedient, you know. Had a lot of things going on, insecurities, esteem issues. Didn't feel confident about myself. Really didn't like who I was. Really didn't like the person that God had created. Really couldn't tap into what God had already given me, and I always would look outside of myself to try to make myself feel good on the inside. And I can remember at a young age, and I need to say this too, because when I did a fourth step, I found out that I'm an emotional person. I'll cry just like that. You know, when I was using drugs, man, I used to cover that up. When I was in the penitentiary, I used to cover it up because drugs gave me a false insecurity. But now I can just cry. I can cry when I hear somebody else's story. And you know what I'm saying? So that's how my spirit is today. Because someone told me a person who can't cry has a dead spirit. And my spirit is not dead, and I will cry, you know, because I'm very, very passionate about my story, my life, and I'm passionate about what God has done for me over the years. As I was saying at the end, and I just wanted to just newcomer, and this is just for newcomer, just for identification purposes, newcomer, I was shooting dope. I was on two methadone programs, and I had just started smoking crack. So, you know, that was the end of the story right there, right? Yeah. Woke up one day, had this brilliant idea, woke up in the morning, and you know, being on heroin, it's a very, very debilitating illness. And I was sick, you know, and woke up one morning, and snow was coming down outside. And I put the covers back over my head, but the disease said, "You're going to get up." You're going to get up, you're going to go out, you're going to get some money, you're going to find some dope, you're going to get on, you know. And by this time, I was just a shell of a man, but you couldn't have told me I was just a shell of a man. I got up, and I remember walking down 16th Street towards a mall that we had down on Benning Road that I had been barred out of. I had been barred out of the whole mall, not just the stores in the mall. They told me don't come on the property, right? But this day, it just didn't matter. So, you know, because the disease calls you, disease is centered in your thinking. It'll tell you that you can go in there and be invisible. Right? That's what I did. I proceeded to go in there. But while I'm walking, thinking, how can I get some money? How can I get some money? What can I do? I came up with an idea to, you know, go steal a lawnmower. Now, this was in February. Snow was everywhere. But it seemed, you know, it seemed good to me. I don't know. I heard this, read this. Someone told me, they say when you are caught up in the grips of insanity, after a while, insanity becomes sane. So it seemed like it was, you know, the right thing to do. And I went in the store, and I proceeded to look for a lawnmower. And they had them all in boxes stacked up on the wall. But I saw one that was put together. And I got it, and I unhooked it, and I'm pushing the lawnmower through the store. And I remember getting a little piece of paper receipt on the floor, because I remember that people would go past the guard, and the guard would wave them on, and I'm pushing the lawnmower, getting towards the door, and I'm saying, please, God, please, God, please let me get out of this store. I remember flashing the paper, and the guard said, go on, and I got outside, and I said, thank you, God. And I'm pushing the lawnmower down the street in the snow, because I didn't have a car. Now, I'm going to show you how the grace of God was working right then, and I didn't even recognize how God was working. Because I'm pushing the lawnmower down the street. No one's on the street. Snow coming everywhere. And I'm in my mind, I got to sell this lawnmower, because I need a shot of dope. And a police car went down the street, made a U-turn, and came all the way back. Man, I'm going to show you how God be working. He stopped, rolled his window down. He said, you with the lawnmower, come here. You know, and I looked at him like, is he talking to me? You know, denial runs real deep. You know, first aspect of disease of addiction. I went over to the car. He said, put your head in the window. He said, I just want to ask you one question. What in the hell are you doing taking a lawnmower down the street in the snow? So a good dope fiend that I am, because I'm a good dope fiend. You know, we have something. We can talk real good. Look. The lawnmower belongs to my aunt. She called me last night. She wants me to bring the lawnmower over to her house so when the springtime comes, she can cut her grass. He said, give me some ID. Ran a check on me. I had a warrant for failure to appear. And I don't know, Central Cell Block is not a pretty place in Washington, D.C. Concrete and steel. They give you sandwiches, man, you can make a pillow out of. For real, they give you donuts, man. That you can't swallow. And this stuff that's called Kool-Aid, you can dye your shirt with. So, and I was sick as a dog, and they locked me up in jail. And I didn't recognize that God was working right then, because when I say mercy and grace, I understand what mercy and grace is. Grace being something given and not deserved. Mercy being justice held back. So I'm grateful. I'm grateful for my experiences. I'm grateful for my story, because they took me over to D.C. jail, and they kept me over there for 2 weeks, and they took me back to court. And I need to tell you, I didn't know it then, but when they took me back to court, because I saw my picture when the last day I used. I don't know if you remember Tales of the Crypt. Used to come on TV. A man called a Crypt Keeper. That's what I looked like. Standing in front of that judge, and he looked at me and he said, Mr. McCray, let me ask you a question, sir. He said, it says on here you got a college education, you're a Vietnam veteran, you have all these good jobs, you come from this good family, but down the bottom it says you've been locked up 27 times this year. He said, son, do you have a problem? You know, denial runs deep. When I go in front of the judge, I don't have no problem, I need a job. That's why I'm stealing. If my girlfriend had some money, I wouldn't have to steal. But this time, I don't know where it came from. I said, help me. Help me. And I said it so loud, the marshal, he thought I was getting ready to break, I guess. He came up there. So, I don't ever want to have to live like that no more, right? So the judge said, help you. This is what I'm going to do. He said, I probably need to send you to jail. But what I'm going to do, I'm not going to court appoint you to a program, but if you can leave court and get into a program on your own, I'll consider not sending you back to jail. And they let me out. And soon as I got out, because it's amazing how you're so humble, God help me, I'm humble. I'll do anything you want. But soon as, man, he let me out, the arrogance came back and humility left. I got this, and I continue to use. So it's a reason why I was told a posture of humility is where I always have to stay. Because I get real arrogant and forget how it was. So I kept using, and what happened, I had to hit a bottom, y'all, a real, real hard physical bottom, to the point that I was injecting so much heroin into my leg that my leg would swell when I would walk on it, because I had messed up the arteries in the vein. And I was dragging my leg around, and I'm going to show you how the disease is so powerful. When I went to the doctor at VA hospital, they said, Thaddeus, if you keep shooting dope in your leg, you're going to lose it. Disease said, don't worry about it, you got another one. And I got in the hospital, and they put me in the hospital, and they called around the drug ward after they got me together. And they said, we got a good guy. They got a guy that would be a good candidate for your program. And they came around and interviewed me, and I was toxic. And they said, would you like to get in our program? I said, I don't know. look, do you want some help? I said, well, how long is it? You want to get in our program? Because I forgot what the judge said, get in the program or go back to jail. Some say, just tell them yeah. I said, I guess so. And they put me in the program, and I wasn't thoroughly convinced. You know, I mean, I didn't want to really stop using. Maybe I could find a safe way to use, just on the weekends. I was in the beginning. Because if I know if I go to treatment, they ain't going to send me back to jail. So I got in that program, and something amazing happened. God working one more time, which started to happen. They had a thing called D.C. Area H&I Subcommittee. Would come up there and give meetings, and we would have to get up 8 o'clock in the morning on Sunday morning. And I wanted to find out why in the hell would people come on a Sunday morning to have a meeting? What is this all about? And I sat right in the back. I sat in the back because I wasn't going to sit up the front, you know, because I'm just going to see what they had to talk about. And I can remember this guy named Horace W. Horace W. was the first guy who taught me how to steal. Taught me how to walk in the stores, wrap stuff up, put them under my arms. Taught me how to put a suit and tie on and go into a store because you don't want to look the part of a thief when you go into the store, Thaddeus. He's the one who taught me. I ain't seen Horace in about 7 years. And this guy came in, and this particular day, he was dressed immaculate. And I looked, I'm sitting in the back, and I said, damn, he looked familiar. He looked like Horace, but man, ain't Horace. Because Horace used to eat out of trash cans. You know, that couldn't be Horace. I ain't never seen Horace with a suit on. And I'm sitting back there, and the speaker, the chairperson introduced, and they said, I wanted to introduce Horace W., and I sat up in my seat. I said, God damn. Like new money. And I'm sitting there and I don't recognize the seed is being planted because he's sharing his experience driven hope. He's talking about, man, the program has one promise, freedom from active addiction. But with that one promise, you can get a whole lot of gifts because when you stop using, a lot of things start happening. He had talked about coming in this program, man, not using a day at a time, man, because he had never lived in a house. Now he was in the process of buying a house. He had talked about coming in this program, never, ever working. And he had been on the same job for 7 years. He had talked about coming in this program, not finishing school, but because he applied himself and stopped using, he had went back to school, and not only did he get his GED, but he was at Lincoln University studying to be getting his master's degree. And what had happened, I said, God damn, I wish I could do that. God was working. God used him as the vessel. And he came to me after the meeting and hugged me and said, Thaddeus, man, hang in there, keep coming back. And when I got out of that facility, they gave me my first suggestion. They say, we suggest that you go to a long-term program. I said, well, I've been here 6 months. They said, no, Thaddeus. Because if you leave, you're not going to go to any meetings. You're not going to get a sponsor. You're not going to pray. And you're definitely not going to help nobody. Because your history shows that. You need structure right now. So if you want something different, we suggest you do something different. And I took it. I took the suggestion, and I did it. And I went to a program in a shelter, and I said, I'm in a shelter. But I forgot I stayed in the back of my mom's car in the yard. And that program introduced me to y'all. I got a sponsor very, very early on who had encouraged me to go to meetings. And in the beginning, my sponsor encouraged me to start building this relationship with this power that had been carrying me. Because he encouraged me to pray. He said, Thaddeus, this program, he said, you can find the God of your own, because that's the freedom in this program. But he said, because of your inconsistency, he said, what I want you to do, first of all, I want you to call me every day. And in the beginning, I was the person who had the whys. I don't know if anybody knows that. Everything he would say, I would say, why? You know, and then it proceeded from the whys to I know. Then he would say stuff and I say, I know. So that's how it went, right? But thank God for him, because what he said, well, this is what I want you to do. When you wake up in the morning, the first thing you do when you hit your knees, I want you to hit your knees and just say thank you. At night before you go to bed, I want you to hit your knees and say thank you. Because you can take that little thing for granted that God didn't have to blow breath in your body. Somebody didn't wake up this morning. But God then saved you, because I want you to learn how to start building this relationship and nurturing this relationship with God, because somewhere along the line, you're going to find out that God is going to be your greatest source of strength. And I didn't know it then, because I'm brand new. I really didn't know it then. I didn't even know what was going to come down the pipe. Because as you stay clean, when you stop using drugs, life shows up. It's amazing. And you can always tell, and I thank Mark for sharing that, because you can always tell how strong your faith is when things start happening in your life to show you whether you're going to be, whether you're going to go to God with it or whether you're going to go on God's will. Go to God with or go on self-will, should I say. Because there's a whole lot of things start happening when I stop using. Okay? Early on, I was looking for a job. I couldn't find a job. Sponsor said, go on to meeting. I want you to learn to listen, Thaddeus, because you're brand new right now. You understand? Go on to meeting and listen for God, because God kind of works through people, so you need to be open. Because if you closed, then you might block what he might be trying to send you. So that's what I did, and I listened. I listened very early on, but I'm trying to find a job, and I couldn't find a job. And I took a risk and raised my hand and asked somebody for a job. And I said, after the meeting, I said, yeah, in the burning desire, anybody know what a job? Come up and tell me. Three guys came up and told me. And they said, Thaddeus, go up and they're applying. They are hiring at VA hospital. And I went up VA hospital, and after they told me, well, when they first told me they're hiring up VA hospital, I said, well, that's the federal government. They said, yeah, that's the federal government. Go up there and apply for the job. I said, but I got a record. They said, so what? Go and apply for the job. Because God means for you to get the job, you'll get the job. And learn, understand this, Thaddeus, and I'm grateful for all the experience I learned in the beginning, that we recover with dignity. We don't hold our heads down. We look people in the eye and we tell them the truth. We don't let people hold our past against us. We make people hold us from the day. Are you using right now? I said, no. Okay, then. What happened is in the past. So, and when you get to the part about filling out the application, have you ever been locked up? Say yes. And that was beyond me. Yes. Yeah, Daddy, say yes. And you sell yourself an interview. An interview, say, I'll explain. You sell yourself. You let them meet you where you at. So I'm new, 9 months in the program. I go up there fearful. Oh, God. I filled out the application. The man looks at it and he said, Mr. McCray, come in and sit down. I noticed your application. I've been looking at it. It's a big gap. You worked in 5 years. What was you doing in that time? I said, people in Narcotics Anonymous, they sell myself. So I told him my story. And I was real graphic, y'all, because I couldn't really tell it without telling them how many stores I shoplifted from. I worked in the industry when I was locked up. You know, but if you give me a chance, I'll do a good job. And he said, okay, I heard enough, we'll call you. And I went out the door, y'all, with my head down, wishing that I hadn't said some of the stuff I had said. And I'm saying, them damn people in Narcotics Anonymous told me to come up here and sell myself. And something amazing happened. Something amazing happened, y'all. A week and a half later, he called me. He said, Mr. McCray, come on back up here. I went in real slow, opened the door. He said, sit down. He said, look. Let me ask you something, first of all. He said, last time you was up here, all that stuff you told me, is that true? You know, I wanted to say no, but I held my head down. I was talking to my chest. I said, yes, sir, it's true. He said, well, I need to say this. I've been working here 23 years, and I have never heard a story like that. Goodness gracious. He said, but you know what? I have never had nobody be that honest. I'm going to take a risk and I'm going to hire you. God was working one more time. All I had to do was just kind of get out the way, because I found out most of the things that caused me pain in this program are things that I won't let go of. For real. Things I won't let go of. You know, I mean, I can tell you a wealth of things. You know, early on, you know, for some reason they tell you as newcomers, don't get into relationships. And I understand that now after being here for 13 years, why they saying that, especially if you haven't gotten to a point that you kind of learn who you are, learn your buttons, your triggers. You know, my sponsor always say, you got to learn how to see yourself coming before you can see somebody else coming. You know, and if you jump in a relationship, because relationships can be real emotional, but you know, because I'm disobedient, I didn't listen. You know, and look, and you know, I thank God for the relationships that I have built, because unfortunately I have damaged some relationships in being clean, but I have repaired some relationships in being clean. And they are experiences. And I was so impressionable in the beginning. And I got in a relationship, and it was, oh, man, out of my head, my ego, I was just, oh, goodness gracious, she was fine, and she had more time than me. And I liked her. But at some point, and this is not to say anything bad against her, because what I've come to find out, that people are who they are. And because everybody is not the same, does not mean because you love a person that you got to be with a person. But when you see something stop working, and the inability to let God move in and you move out the way, because I didn't have that ability to say no. So I stayed when I should have left. And you know what? It's amazing being miserable somewhere and faking the funk when you know it ain't working. Everybody else know it ain't working. But you stay because the fear won't let you leave. Because your faith is so shaky. But you talk about this relationship you done built with God, but now you got an opportunity and you don't trust him. So a friend of mine say, Thaddeus, when you get tired of the car pulling you around the street, you'll let go of the bumper. Car dragging you around the street and you just holding on. And you know what? My friend said, man, I said, how you doing? I'm holding on. When you gonna let go? When you gonna let go? When you gonna let this God that brought you in here, that pulled you out of the cemetery and brought you in here, that's been carrying you since you've been here, look at all the evidence you got from where you came from and where you at now, when you were staying in a shelter and when fear locked you in, wouldn't let you move to the next level, and then God sent somebody to tell you, Thaddeus, you need to come out of the sandbox and go into the schoolyard. You need to grow up, because this is a character building program. Okay? And if you get involved with the steps, now everybody gonna get quiet now. I'm gonna hit some nerves now. Because I found now for this addict that the steps are the solution. But application, Mark said it, you can have all the information in the world, but if you don't apply it, it doesn't mean nothing. You know what I'm saying? So I managed to let go, you know, but I was still holding on a little bit. You know, because, it's amazing, man, when you emotionally involved with somebody, because I was told that when you cut off or let go, you got to completely sever all ties. Because the reservation is when you accept phone calls from the person, you're building a reservation. You haven't completely let go. You understand what I'm saying? So I had to go through that process. And over the years, it has gotten easy in a lot of areas. It don't mean that I'm not going to always act on my will. I do a lot of times. And a lot of times when I make decisions and God's not in the decision, boy, it usually turns out to be a bad decision. It really does. You know, my daughter, I love my daughter. I love her. I have an 87-year-old mother. And God, thank God that I'm in the position to help her. Because the highest honor you can have at this program is being of service. I understand. 12 steps say God didn't save you for you. You think he did. He didn't save you to get everything you've got as a result of this program. He saved you to reach out and help somebody, Thaddeus. And sometimes that help exceeds far beyond the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. What about the daughter who told you one day she hates you? You was never a father. Because when I got here, I wanted to build a relationship with my daughter so bad that because of shame and guilt that was holding me hostage. Because, see, shame will hold you hostage in the present, man. You understand? And if you let it go, if you don't let it go, man, you will never be able to move forward in the future. Okay? And so when she asked me to buy her a car, you know, and I'm young in the program. Because I hadn't worked through no shame and guilt, I went out and bought her a car. Because I wanted her to love me. I didn't even have a car. Now, you know, something don't sound right about that. I didn't have a car. I wasn't trusting in God. I went out and bought her a car. And look, you know what the big piece was? It wasn't the piece that I bought her the car. The other thing is that she gave the car to her boyfriend. She did. I was devastated. Then my sponsor say, Thaddeus, look, You bought her the car. It's her car. She can do what she wants to with the car. Are you attaching strings to it? The strings I was attaching was the expectations I was putting on her. Because I hadn't worked through what was really holding me hostage. I hadn't let go and let God of the resentments that was holding me. That was turning into anger. My daughter, you know, fast forward. And over the years, our relationship has gotten a lot better. It's not where I would want it to be, but it's where God says needs to be right now. But I keep working at it, working at it, working at it. And I have a mother I love. And you know, my mother has a lot of codependencies. I understand she's a caretaker because she let me stay there until I was 40. It seemed all right with me. Right? For real. That's not being responsible. But, you know, I understand when they say, man, we're not responsible for our disease. Because when you're on it, you're irresponsible. But when you ain't on it, you know, what's your excuse, Thaddeus? What's your excuse when you walk into a store and you pick up something and put it in your pocket today and you ain't using, but you say it's a process? Okay? So anyway, daughter, my mother, she lived, you know, I love her. I help her as much as I can. And mom's is who she is. And my daughter is just like me. Only thing different, she don't use drugs. But the behaviors are there. She's irresponsible. She's 30 years old. She stays at home with my mother. And that's what she is. She's living on my mother. And you know, and I know it. And the hard part of the challenge is that it's my mother's house. And my mother's all right with it, but I'm not all right with it. So been there, done that. So God say, you need to get out the way. You need to let me work this out. Okay, because what I found out, what was happening, when you become entirely ready in step 6, it talks about when coming entirely ready. Why do I want defects removed? The reason why, because defects, man, can cause me more harm than good. And what I found out when I sat down and talked to her, because what really angered me, she's staying there not paying no rent, so she moves her boyfriend in. And he ain't paying no rent. So my daughter and her boyfriend, they break up, and she rolls out and leaves him there. I know. I can laugh about this shit now. Then, you know, and I was so angry, right? And then I was told, my friend told me, and thank God for my friend, Diane S. She told me, she said, Thaddeus, you need to understand this. At some point, when you have an elderly parent, at some point, the child has to become the parent. The child has to step in. She said, because, you know, that's your daughter's grandmother, but that's your mother. So I prayed on it. God told me to bring my sister in. Like y'all told me, don't never do a 12-step call by yourself, because you got to take yourself out, bring somebody else in to help you. I talked to my sponsor about it. My sister and I got together, and we went over there, and we brought God in it before. And we talked to Dave, and we said, Dave, I said, you know what? My mother really likes you here, because as soon as I shared it with my mother what I was going to do, she started crying. She said, well, Thaddeus, she said, I don't want you to put him out. I said, Mom, I'm not going to put him out. But I said, Mom, you need to understand this. Grown people can't live nowhere for free. He using your gas, your electric, your water. You shouldn't have to pay a bill in this house. You shouldn't have to wash a dish. You shouldn't have to scrub a floor. You shouldn't have to put no trash out. I said, now, this is what we're going to do, Mama. Okay? And I want you to trust me in this. We ain't going to put Dave out, but if Dave stay here, Dave going to pay rent. And we're going to write up a rental agreement, and we're going to put some things in it for him, because God's going to be in the middle of this. And she agreed on it, and we did it. Until it came to the part when she had to sign her part, because the rent I wanted him to pay, she thought was too much. I wanted him, I said, you know, I mean, $400 is not a lot of money. I wish I could stay somewhere for $400. She said, well, I'll sign it, but let's just charge him $200. I said, okay, Mama, this is what we're going to do. We're going to charge him $200 for right now. But in the lease, we're going to say at any time that we want to. we can revisit this. And we have the right to raise the rent. And she agreed, and I kind of got out the way. The first step, say, man, when you learn how to surrender, when you learn how to let stuff go, then the volatile emotions that it talks about, the unmanageability, becomes more easier. Because when I'm trying to hold on, control things that I can't control, it means, man, that I haven't really accepted things for what they are. Okay? So we did that. Now, fast forward to the real present. Daughter called back. She wants to come back home. So you know she don't come to me. She go to mom. So I said, Mama, I said, you know, that's your granddaughter. That's my daughter. And I love her so much. And I know she's struggling, you know. And I said, that's fine if you want to come back here, but you need to understand, if Shanae comes back in here, she's going to pay some rent. She's not going to live here free. And we talked about it. I said, this is the reason why you need to do this, because you need to help her. You're hurting her. If something happened to you today or tomorrow, what do you think going to happen to her? I'm going to help her be responsible. So that's what we did. We sat down. But before I did that, I invited God in it, because that's what I've been taught how to do. Before you go into anything, grand sponsors say, Thaddeus, you got to take all emotions out of it. Because if you go into something very emotional, you're going to say and do things that you're going to regret a lot of times. That happens in my relationship all the time. I'm telling you, boy, one of the biggest challenges is being in a relationship with somebody. You can really see all your defects come out. Because I always continuously take her inventory, and when she's wrong, I let her admit it. I admit it to her all the time. Okay? Because it's amazing how you can see somebody else's defects before you can see your own. And I have to take a step back, because in this posture, a lot of times, I still do fall short, but the process of practicing keeping my mouth shut, practicing getting out of the way, practicing having some trust and faith, it has gotten better over the years. And a lot of it has a lot to do where I'm at spiritually at that particular time. They had changes on my job. This has been a big year of change for me. I had 2 surgeries this year, you know, and I managed to get through it through the grace of God. I told y'all about my leg, and I had messed up the veins and arteries, and I have to wear support holes on it. That's some of the damage I've done to myself. But over the years, what has happened, when I went and had a Doppler done, a Doppler on your leg where they can see how the flow of the blood goes, they found out that the blood was sitting in my groin. It would come up and just sit there. So they said, Thaddeus, if that continues, what will happen, a blood clot probably would go up to your heart and could kill you. So you need to have a procedure done. Okay? And again, you know, it's amazing with me, this addict, how I'll go to God when I get in the problem, instead of going to God, taking the problem to God. You understand what I'm saying? Get in the problem and then wanting to work it out, instead of going to him before you get in the problem. So what happened, I prayed on it, I talked to my sponsor, and I moved forward, and I had the surgery done. And, anybody who's been an intravenous drug user, I know with me, I don't have any veins. And when I go to the doctor, it's an event. You know, it really is. I can laugh about it, but sometimes I don't care how much I have worked on myself over the years, my esteem can be real low some days. When I still look at what I've done to myself and the humiliating thing, because in the basic text it talks about the stigma that's attached to being an addict and how society still views us. And how it's so important for us to hold our heads up and look people in the eye and to move forward. Because that shame and guilt can still hold you hostage. So I had to go get this done, you know. The anesthesiologist, they had to, you know, put a tube in me. And, the nurse, she didn't mean no harm. And I understand that now. I had two little Korean nurses. They were trying to find a vein. They had both of my arms. I'm like this. I'm just laying there, and you know, they hitting and jerking and everything. And the lady said, you don't have no veins. I said, yeah, I don't have no veins. Why you don't have no veins? So, Anthony, I said, well, I'm a recovering addict. She said, oh, you hopeless. Y'all hear what I said?
You hopeless.
And she took her hands off me. Whoa. And right away, all them feelings started coming back of hopelessness. You know? And the nurse across says, she said, don't say that to him. Hopefully you'll get a vein. And she got one. But it still didn't take away from what she said to me. Thank God I was centered that day. Because if I hadn't have been centered, she would have really seen what an addict is like. But I didn't say nothing. Tim Step say, man, Tim Step gives you the ability to think before you respond. And I didn't say nothing, but I still was feeling something. I said, God, please, God, walk with me. I know you're walking with me. Please help me. Please help me right now, God. Please help me not to say nothing. Please help me to get these feelings off of me. And it did. And I went through the surgery, and the surgery was all right. And after the surgery, I shared it with my grand sponsor. He said, Thaddeus, he said, this is what I suggest that you do. He said, because of who we are, and the reality is that you learn how to, when people give you good service, you write a letter and let them know. But when people do things that's not appropriate, you write a letter and let them know. He said, because it might be somebody who comes behind you one day who might receive the same thing. Now understand, she probably didn't mean any harm. That's who she is. But you need to write a letter and let the people know. And I did. I wrote them a letter and I told them what had happened. I don't want them to fire her, but I would hope that they give her some type of training on dealing with people who have no veins, some diversity training. Right? I'm serious. That's stuff that I learned in here. See, this is where I come from. I sit back and complain about stuff and won't do nothing. I point fingers, but I won't step up to the plate. Y'all told me, be proactive, Thaddeus. This thing is about holding your head up. This thing is about having some integrity. This thing is about doing things when you really don't want to do them. So I did it, and man, they wrote me a letter back, man, and they said, Mr. McCray, thank you so much. We are so sorry what happened to you. We're going to take this into consideration. We're not going to fire her. But what we're going to do, we are going to train her. One more time, God. God working through people. God helping me. In closing, I want to share this. I'm going to share this in closing. Two things real quick. I haven't got my five-minute little tag up here, but I'm going to share this, and I'm going to sit on down. Okay, I got it just now. There you go. Boy, I'm telling you, he's always on time. My job, big changes, a lot of changes on my job, and thank God for my sponsor, you know. I thank God for my sponsor. But not only that, I thank God for the relationship that I have built with my sponsor, that I can listen to him. You understand what I'm saying? I don't put him up there, but it's a word that we use in our step study group, call reverence. It means respect. I respect my sponsor. And I shared with them because I came to work and they had this organization, we had to move our offices and everything, and I was real, real angry, you know, because they let us know at the last minute. I came to work on a Tuesday and the offices, I had to change my office by Friday. And I'm, you know, I'm not going to them, but, you know, I don't know if you know what false humility is, but false humility is appearing humble on the outside, but on the inside you're very, very arrogant. Because humility means, man, being modest and meek in mind, spirit, attitude. Okay, and I was very, very angry, and man, these motherfucking people on this job, excuse me for cursing, but this is where I was. And I called my sponsor and I shared it with him. And I'm telling him, but I got to move my office. He said, Thad, let me ask you a question. Because they moved me from the top floor to the basement floor. He said, Thaddeus, would you rather move to the basement floor or move out the front door? Reality. Day back. One more time, you know, the gratitude that sometimes eludes me. Okay? God working through him. You know, get out the way, Thaddeus. Because you stay in the way too much. Get out the way and let God handle this. This is God's work. This ain't your work, okay? So, and I thank God for that. Last thing, I'm going to share this, and I'm going to sit down. And I share this, just showing again God's work early on in the process. I was in this treatment center I told y'all about, and what I found out over the years is important not only to work on your defects, but to learn how to nurture your assets. I think Mark talked about that, because we're not all bad people, we're not all good people. We have both. So one of my assets is my personality, I found that. Now, I speak to people. You know, that just comes from the way I was raised, just who I am, and it comes from experience I had very early on in the process when I was kind of dissed as a newcomer by somebody with time, and I was told, if you stay here, you don't treat people like that. So that's how you do, because sponsors say when people ain't practicing principles, you practice principles, in spite of what you're feeling. So every morning in treatment at the shelter, I would get up, and I felt good. I spiritually refreshed, glad to be alive. I get up and walk down the hall. I meet the guy come. I say, good morning. God just roll his eyes and keep walking. I said, damn, maybe he didn't hear me. So the next morning, good morning. He looked right through me. So I said, man, something wrong with this, you know. So I told my sponsor, he said, Thaddeus, this is what I want you to do. Keep speaking. I said, what? He said, yeah, just keep speaking. So I don't know why I say this, but I said, if this is the man I want to guide me through the process, then I need to probably take his suggestion in spite of what I'm feeling. So the next morning, I see him, and I said, good morning. Man, the dude gritted on me. He gritted. I said, I'm not speaking to this mother no more. I'm not speaking. And you know, where I come from, you don't do that. Next morning, true story, I swear to God, coming down the hall, man, we coming down the hall, our eyes met. He said, good morning. Yeah. Right? So I told my sponsor, he said, Thaddeus, check this out. He said, you speaking to people, that's who you are. You can't let people change who you are based on who they are. By you continuously being who you are, you might have helped that guy. Sometimes people have challenges you don't even know anything about. All your life, you let people pull you where you wanted, where they wanted to take you. You got to keep on being who you are. Let God work it out. So, again, my name is Thaddeus. I'm an addict. Thanks for letting me share.